visiting a clinic where there are children chewed to a bed and lying on the floor suffering from malaria makes a pretty strong impression.
Hi, I'm Nick Gillespie for Reason TV, and today we are talking with Donald Roberts and Richard Tren, authors of the new book, The Excellent Powder, DDT's Political and Scientific History. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
What is excellent about DDT?
Well, DDT is a chemical that has saved hundreds of millions of lives. It's protected billions of people from the threat of insect-borne diseases. And what could be more excellent than that? And it's done so without harming human health.
Okay, now this is clearly not the received wisdom or the popular, well, I guess it's not the received scientific wisdom, unfortunately, and it's not the popular understanding of DDT. We know DDT destroys eagle eggs and makes people sprout extra arms and things. So what's behind the disjuncture?
The disjuncture basically is a product of fear campaigns that were started back in the 60s, and they have been continued to present time. Fear campaigns that link to potential or theoretical harm to wildlife as well as theoretical harm to human health. Those harms simply don't exist if you look carefully at the scientific record. But the perception exists in the minds of the public.
And one of the flashpoints for that was Rachel Carson in the 60s with Silent Spring, right? That's where the kind of modern environmental movement grows out of that, and she fingered DDT and other kinds of insecticides and chemicals at use. Is there any science? I mean, you're saying that DDT does not harm the environment or does not harm human beings.
Saying that DDT does not inflict severe harm on wildlife or the environment, and it does not inflict severe harm on human health. But when you look at the way DDT is used in malaria control, where it's sprayed on house walls, not in the environment, not broadly distributed in the environment, then it becomes literally unavailable for doing the kinds of harm that many of the campaigners against the use of insecticides in public health claim.
What is the legal status of DDT throughout the world? And it's most needed in the developing world, right?
Right. DDT has been banned in most places for use in agriculture. It still remains available for use in public health. And under the Stockholm Convention, which is a UN convention to ban persistent organic pollutants, there is an exemption for use in public health. So it still can be used. However, there is a deadline that has been set by 2017 where the UN Stockholm Convention wants to halt in all production of DDT and an elimination completely by 2020. So no more production after 2017. So it still can be used. What's interesting and what's been happening over the past few years is that even though the U.S. government is now funding use of DDT through a very good malaria control program, the growing regulations on how you can use these insecticides has made it more difficult to use, less available, and more expensive to store, transport, and use. And so regulations is kind of pricing it out of the market. And there are fewer producers now. One of the big producers was China, and they, in compliance with the UN convention, this UN convention, the Stockholm Convention, have ceased production. So,
how many lives could a more robust use of DDT save?
It could have huge impact on the amount of disease that we have in the developing countries today. Huge impact, and the reason we know that for absolute certainty is that we already have a history of how effective it can be. By 1969, when the global eradication program was brought to an end, it had literally freed roughly a billion people from endemic disease. That was DDT and DDT alone. And so we have that history. We know it can be very, very effective.
So, I mean, we're talking about billions of people.
Yes.
And there are no easily available alternatives or?
There are alternative insecticides that can be used. There are none that work in the way in which DDT works, and we devote a substantial portion of the book to describing the modes of action of DDT. That the conventional wisdom is that insecticides kill mosquitoes, that the only good mosquito is a dead mosquito. In fact, that's false. And there's decades of evidence that shows that DDT stops mosquitoes from coming into houses. It works as a spatial repellent. There are no other replacement insecticides that work in that way. There's growing resistance to these other insecticides. And we're seeing growing pressure from some scientists and from activist groups against the use of those chemicals. And what we fear, and one of the reasons for writing this book, is that if these groups do to DDT what they do to these other chemicals what they have done to DDT, we face serious problems with disease control, and not just in the developing world, but in the developed world as well.
Talk very briefly about why are you interested in this topic, or how did you come to this topic?
Well, my interest dates back to the 1970s. I was conducting research along with a team of other researchers in the Amazon basin. We were studying disease epidemiology. And so I became very curious as to how this chemical, when sprayed on house walls, could have such a tremendous impact. And so eventually I had the opportunity to carry out some studies in a very remote area of the Amazon basin. And so I produced, built these experimental huts, and we studied very carefully the movement of mosquitoes into and out of these huts. And then after a couple of years of study, we sprayed one of them. And quite frankly, the result of that experiment changed my whole professional life, because what I observed was that as soon as the house was sprayed, that was the end of the mosquitoes coming into that house. Now, in an unsprayed house that was nearby, the mosquitoes continued coming in and biting throughout the night. But in the sprayed house, that was it. And that protection, that prevention of mosquitoes coming into the house at nighttime and biting, which is the time they transmit disease, that protection was continuing 12 months later from one spray.
Richard, what's the origin of your interest?
Well, unlike Don, I'm not an entomologist or specialist in tropical disease. I'm an economist, and I was interested in the environment and development. And when I was living in South Africa, at the time when the Stockholm Convention on Persistent Organic Pollutants was being negotiated, there was a massive malaria epidemic, and it was precisely because DDT was taken out of use in South Africa and there was resistance to the alternative insecticides. And I got interested in this. I knew nothing about DDT, but spoke to many malaria scientists about these problems and visited these malaria areas where, you know, visiting a clinic where there are children two to a bed and lying on the floor suffering from malaria makes a pretty strong impression. And I got interested because, through that, and have continued. That was in 99, 2000, and have continued to campaign on this. And we're writing the book to set the record straight, basically.
And very briefly, tell us, what's the title come from, The Excellent Powder?
It comes from a speech that Winston Churchill made in 1944 when he explained that they were using the excellent DDT powder to save the lives of troops and civilians in the European and Pacific theaters of war.
I want to thank Don Roberts and Richard Tren, authors of The Excellent Powder, DDT's Political and Scientific History. For Reason TV, I'm Nick Gillespie.